With the growing worldwide acceptance of cannabis, we look back into the ancient past to discover what was it about cannabis that was so prized by the ancient Chinese, the Persians, and even the Egyptians. How did cannabis help the ancient hunter-gatherers in what scientists now say was an evolutionary leap? We'll learn about the details of cannabis, its sacrament, and how the church banned it for hundreds of years. Later, we'll hear from Melissa Tittle on how cannabis affects us today, and Adam Young will provide us with links to ancient technology from the past. All this in the news today on Earth Ancients. For Saturday, July 21st, 2018, this is Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. Hey. Okay, it's time. Are you ready? Are you set? It's Earth Ancients time. It's time to check in. It's time to discuss the past, the future. Anyhow. Hey, how are you? How you doing? This is another episode of Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. If you're enjoying your summer, I'm having a great time. I think I told you last Saturday I went to a beer fest. Had a great time. This festival was an excellent, excellent time. I mean, not only do they have like 40 different taps or 40 different microbreweries there. They also had a number of wine companies that were there and a champagne company. So, and as I mentioned, all the food was included. And so I had a great, great time. I met a lot of friends and it wasn't too hot. Last year it was like about 95 and it was blistering. So it wasn't that enjoyable. This year it was fun. It was a good time. And it was perfect. It's really a perfect festival. And I think I mentioned it's Euro style. When I say Euro style, a lot of American craft breweries or companies that have festivals, they don't provide food. You got to pay for food. And when the craft beer movement first started in the early 90s, you would see these festivals serving cheese and crackers or cheese and slices of bread with no food. And people just got sloshed. They got hammered. And you can't do that. And what the Europeans have been doing for hundreds of years is when they have a festival, they have a gathering, they serve protein. They serve meat, sausages, and all kinds of meats that you can enjoy with your beer. And this festival called Breast Fest. It's a benefit for a women's health clinic in Marin County, California. Serves a number of different items from pizza to burgers to hot dogs to sausages to three or four kinds of salads with chicken. We've got chicken burgers. They got veggie burgers for people that don't eat meat. Then they have ice cream. I mean, you know, heavy carbs. They even had macaroni and cheese there, which I don't know. I didn't try it. I didn't think it would be good, but some people said it was pretty good, so to go with their beer. Anyhow, I'm having a good time enjoying my vacation, and I hope you are too. This week, we are talking about the historic use of cannabis and how ancient cultures integrated and cultivated hemp for clothing, rope for doing work, but also developed the psychoactive properties known as THC. And we're going to hear from an expert. Chris Bennett has been writing about cannabis throughout the ages for over three decades. I was fascinated to learn about China And China is a central point where it was actually cultivated and developed into its psychoactive properties. But we're also going to hear about how the church would eventually shut it down from use, because the psychoactive properties, and this is what I'm beginning to learn about, actually evolve the process of thinking. And we don't actually know how this happens. We're learning more about it. But scientists do know that about 5,000 years ago, there was what they call a great leap forward. And the great leap that they're referring to is not only intellectual, but consciousness. Now, when they say the great leap, they're talking about what they term the hunter and gatherers, people who are foraging for food. They began to domesticate animals. They began during this great leap. They began to cultivate crops. And they weren't foraging anymore. They weren't struggling to figure out how to make a living, how to survive. What I find interesting about cannabis is that there is something about the chemical makeup that is a benefit to the body and the brain. And we're going to hear about this today, this evolutionary leap. And it's funny to say that when the religions were formed, the founding fathers began to interpret the use of cannabis as a threat to their power over people, and began to eliminate the use of psychoactive cannabis simply because people would begin thinking, like, what the hell are you talking about? What are you telling us to do? And people are able to think for themselves, and this is not what the church wanted. So if you're a religious person, you may find parts of this discussion today a little uncomfortable, and as always, be as open as you can. Be thinking about what the benefits are. I mean, again, there is a great deal we just do not know about the effects of cannabis. And this is my curiosity about it. If scientists are saying it provided an evolutionary leap, why aren't we using it more actively? Now, I will tell you this, and this has been coming out in the last few years, is that the properties in THC actively affect people with Alzheimer's, and actually it can relieve certain types of dementia and brain problems. Also, it has a positive effect on the cardiovascular system, as well as digestion and some other areas. I mean, we know the extract from of cannabis, which is CBD, helps people with arthritis, helps people with various problems. And this is a wonder weed, a wonder drug. And the benefits are seemingly growing, and we're learning scientifically that it has quite a bit of benefits to us physically and possibly spiritually. So this is going to be this is a fun topic to talk about. Now, I'm not advocating that people go out and start smoking cannabis. By the way, you don't have to smoke it. You can eat it now. They have it in edible form. You can drink it. There's all ways to consume it. But I think the important thing to consider is that this is something that could be a form of evolution, a species evolution. We'll hear today about how some earlier cultures, the Chinese and the people who lived in present-day Iran and Iraq, which in the old days was Persia, used these psychoactive liquids or beverages to do divination, to connect with higher realms, and to get a sense of who they were as humans, what they were doing here. And, you know, who knows what great things have been written regarding humanity with people who were under the influence of this psychoactive cannabis. So, by the way, the term that's used quite regularly is soma and heoma. Soma is a word for a psychoactive beverage. It's a soma heoma. Heoma is the same thing. Heoma is a Persian-based terminology for psychoactive beverage. So you'll hear that term a lot today. And I think you're really going to enjoy the program, which is today's interview. I want to remind everybody that in November of this year, the 17th through the 24th, we're doing our sacred trip to Yucatan, Mexico. And this is the trip we're taking to discover and experience the Maya of the past. And these pyramids that we'll visit, these ancient ruins, are phenomenal. And they're magnificent, not only to see, but we'll experience them. Some of these sites have been activated. My mentor, who is a Mayan daykeeper, a sacred priest, a Mayan priest, told me, and by the way, he passed away. His name was Humbats Min. He passed away a couple of years ago, that a lot of these sites are activated, are active. And we got a sense of that when we were in Mayapan, which is one of the first sites that we go to. And we climbed the pyramid. That's the first pyramid we go to, the main El Castillo, the castles that we check out. And when people were on top of that, I'd say 80% felt some sense of energy or some sense of vibration coming out of the top of this structure. So you get to experience that. And if you want more information, we're about halfway full. Go to earthancients.com/tours. You can see the entire itinerary. We hang out in Mérida, which is a fun colonial city, and we go Maya city hopping every day. We go see a couple of different sites. We pack a lot into your tour. 7 days of extraordinary visits, experiences. We climb. You don't have to climb if you're not into climbing buildings or pyramids. You can just take the map that I provide and go off and check it out on yourself. You know, you don't have to follow us. You can hang out. A lot of people just go and do their own thing. But check it out. Join us November 17th through the 24th. And this is a great vacation. And we've made it very, very, very inexpensive. So pretty much anybody on a budget can join us. Go to earthancients.com/tours. Earth Ancients is sponsored by your subscriptions, and if you're not a subscriber, hey, consider it. For just $5 a month, you not only support the work that we do here on Earth Ancients, and we're trying to grow the show each month, introducing new podcasts, introducing cutting-edge content, topics, and of course, a who's who of authors and research investigators. The best of the best are here on Earth Ancients. And by the way, if you don't know that, go back, you know, punch in on our website, earthancients.com, punch in a name that you think you'd like to hear from. They're all here. They've been with me. A lot of them come back. But the people that we have on the show are the best of the best, the top-notch people. When you're a Patreon subscriber, you support the work that we do there. But also, as a subscriber, we have a ton of content that's for you. I have a number of books that you can download. They're digital books. We have galleries, and there are unpublished interviews. And these interviews are wide open. People say what's on their mind. I don't edit anything. As an example, Dr. Michio Kaku is on there talking about his belief about science and where NASA's taking us next, the propulsion systems that are in use and that are coming up to check out. It's all there on Patreon. So please consider becoming a subscriber. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/Earth Ancients. Okay, so here are the latest subscribers. I want to thank each of you for joining the Earth Ancients subscribers. I want to thank Marshall Pike, Leonard Kultthan, Greta von Kirchman, Stephen Mastrangelo, Paul Zickler, and Richard Finsome. Hey, thank you all, and welcome to the Earth Ancients family. It's great to have you with us. So we want to check in with Melissa Tittle. As you know, Melissa works for Gaia. She's a producer, produces a ton of stuff, and she has a great history of working for organizations, production companies, channels that do a lot of ancient history. And, of course, this is all things cannabis. We're talking in, about its historic notion, where it came from, how it was used. And anyhow, hey, Melissa, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. So given we're in, you're in Colorado, so I believe cannabis is sold retail there, right?
So
what's
baked.
The deal? Huh?
So baked. Yes, of course.
You're so baked right now? Oh, okay.
I believe it's the first state that was the first to legalize it.
Yeah.
God, how many years, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that. Yeah. So the thing is, the cannabis conversation isn't really such a big deal. I remember when I was leaving Los Angeles and it hadn't been legalized yet and it was such a big deal. Everybody had their vape pens and everybody was talking about it and how it was so good for everybody all the time, you know? But the thing is, it's such a part of people's routines, or if they need it medicinally,
yeah,
that it just becomes part of the bigger conversation of health instead of like, have you heard of this thing called cannabis? It's been illegal and now it's legal. You know, it's not right. Such a big deal in Colorado, because for such a long time it's been, I mean, for people here, it's been legalized.
Well,
so
we just legalized it here in California, and I mean, it's nuts that it wasn't legalized decades ago, because right. So many of these really critical strains, and I can name a million different strains like Sour Diesel and Blue Dream and so on, they were created here in Northern California. A lot of them were created in Southern California. So what the hell is going on? You know what I mean? My question I have for you, and this is what came up today in my interview with Chris Bennett, is mm-hmm. that there is a really critical evolutionary component to the use of cannabis. And what they've discovered is that in the brain, there's these cannabinoids, these receptors that are identical to the cannabinoids that are found in THC. And one of the questions he has in his book, and what scientists are now speculating, is that during our evolution, the use of these hallucinogens and their effect on the physiology allowed the brain to expand, the people to become more creative, and it was considered a product that actually helped us evolve. What do you think about that?
I would have to agree. I think that just like all medicine, in a way.
Yeah, I like that term, medicine. Yeah, good.
It does change our DNA in different ways, but it changes our DNA and we grow new synapses in our brain so that we can expand. So there's, maybe that was a way for creative problem solving.
Yeah.
There's people that go to each extreme. There's people like trying to tell the world that cannabis is the best thing. Mm-hmm. There's other people fighting against it. Like, you shouldn't use drugs. It's like, okay, well then don't take aspirin. It's a plant too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, the fundamentals of it, yeah.
So, I do agree with that. I 100% agree. I think that anything plant-based in moderation is part of Mother Earth for us to partake in if we need it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best kind of medicine. And most things started out naturally as far as the medicines you see out there, and they became synthetic, and that causes way more problems in the body and less evolution than if you're partaking in cannabis or using CBD oil or expanding your mind, growing synapses.
Yeah, I mean, even the CBD oils, which are not psychoactive, have huge benefits that are being used by more and more people. And I think it's just fascinating that this plant has so many medicinal attributes. And what the term I was looking for here is that scientists call it the great leap forward, and that cannabis is responsible for prehistoric man's beginning to take on more complex thoughts, creative thoughts. And it's hard for them to tag exactly what the creativity is, but they see this jump in societies that are using cannabis not only as a sacrament, but also as kind of a tool.
Well, I think, things that stimulate different parts of your brain allow you as a human being to see different kinds of patterns in the world.
Yeah.
You might go about your day and not think that there's a lot of patterns. You might think like, okay, I got to go to work and then I get my coffee and all this kind of stuff. That's not the pattern I'm talking about. There's a pattern, there's a synchronicity in life that sometimes when you're able to create new synapses, you start to see it. That creates a new way to look at your world. I'm not saying you have to be super high. I'm just saying that mm-hmm. you start to look at the world a little bit differently. Maybe you see how it's connected. Maybe they started to see their environment a little bit more in a different way so they could create a different kind of society or a way to go about living. And I think humans do this all the time. And if they have something that can push them a little bit forward, I think that is 100% true.
Yeah, you've interviewed Graham Hancock, and Graham wrote a book about psychotropic drugs and his own experience with ayahuasca. Does he bring up the use of cannabis strongly in any of his talks that you've interviewed him with?
He does, but I think he goes a little bit further than that. You know, he talks mm-hmm. about DMT, and he talks about
DMT, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ayahuasca. I mean, he's got nothing against cannabis. I think that's part of...
He totally supports it, yeah.
I think he goes a little bit further to kind of go beyond this realm. I look at cannabis as something that, CBD oil, or if you're partaking in the THC part of it, it's a plant. And I feel like the DNA structure of cannabis fits into our cellular structure so well it's not such an experience like a DMT or a ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Or like your body's like, holy shit, this seems more like a poison.
I know. Or it's so overwhelming. You just have to sit and experience it and just let it ride, because it's so powerful, which I don't have. I'm not interested in doing ayahuasca. It's just I've heard just too many crazy things about it. But maybe I don't know. Maybe before I leave the planet.
You just don't want to get entities attached to you. That's the thing. It's like you don't want to fly to another dimension and not be in the right space to receive the right kind of energy. That would be my own advice.
I think what they all say, these guys who are regular experiencers of ayahuasca, is that you go in with an intention, number one. Number two, you have a very good person who's the leader of the program, either a shaman who's very knowledgeable of the plant mix and can take people who are maybe having some scary aspects to help them get through it, so on and so forth. You have to really prepare, is what it sounds like. So
spiritually as well.
Yeah, good point. Hey, well, thanks for that insight. And I am just really amazed that this discussion is coming up, because I didn't think about it for a long, long time. Then I found Chris Bennett, and he's a prolific author. And I just think that's one of psychotropic plants that have been around since the beginning of time, that have been shunned by the church, that now are being made available, and that people should reconsider. And they're not like, these horrible things.
I know. Well, evolution. It's happening.
Thanks, Melissa.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. Bye. Bye-bye.
Hey, this is a very active week, so we want to check in with Adam Young, our media critic, and see what he's got going on. Hey, Adam, how you doing, man?
Pretty good, thanks.
Cool. So I see here you got two new items listed for the week, and here's one that I am curious about. The first topic is sealed black granite sarcophagus open. Now, they posted, a number of people posted images of this 30-ton black granite sarcophagus, and I see here it was found in Alexandria. I was wondering where it was found. So what can you tell us about this large sarcophagus?
So this link is to the Ancient Architects channel, and I like this gentleman. He's a British guy that has talked about the pyramids and a number of other subjects in South America and Egypt. He basically gives us a sort of a summary of what was found. So, you know, about a month ago, they announced they discovered this burial chamber. It's basically just a hole in the ground. Inside was a black sarcophagus, granite, and it looks similar to a lot of the other ones you see in, like, the Osiris shaft. And but to note, you know, I want to footnote it, this is much smaller than the ones that were in the Serapeum. So they estimated this one weighs 30 tons to it together.
Uh-huh.
The Serapeum boxes, by comparison, are over 100 tons, so it's much lighter. And he has some pretty good video clips and footage here of what happened when they opened it up. Number one, it was sealed with mortar, unlike the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that indicates a reuse. And number two, three bodies were found inside. Now, they believe these are Roman soldiers or officers' bodies, and one of them, I think, had like an arrow wound, or it looks like they were injured and probably died in battle. And then were most likely hastily, you know, thrown into this sarcophagus, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
And if you think about who would be important enough to carve these things out, the traditional story says they're for dynastic, you know, leaders or the upper class or people like that, pharaohs and whatnot. So why would you put three Roman bodies inside of one? You know, why would an officer or be important enough to make these things? So I think it speaks of reuse. Perhaps the Romans had opened this up and looted it, if that's what you choose to believe the original purpose was, or they just saw these things and decided to use it.
I want to ask you something about this sarcophagus. I have not seen a close-up of this black granite sarcophagus. Is it appearing to be machined? Because from the angle that I've seen it, which is looking down, I think it's a 30-foot pit or something, that it doesn't look necessarily like the sarcophaguses we see at the Serapeum, which are brilliant and cut with great, great precision. What do we know about the manufacturer of this sarcophagus?
I don't see any measurements taken, but the angles appear to be fairly geometric. And I think the only way you can cut and machine granite like this and to make it so precise would be to using some sort of machine, some sort of tool, either a power tool or a machinery of some type. Yeah.
Okay. So you're thinking that it's may have been reused or, as you call it, repurposed, and that it is from the very, very, very early period where they were using, they were machining these very hard igneous rock, granite rock sarcophaguses, sarcophagi.
Yeah, no one really knows. I would, you know, if I had to guess, I'd say high technology is pre-cataclysm, pre-flood.
Okay.
In general.
Seriously old. Okay, cool. All right, so that's the first one. The second one is titled Baffling Relic, relics that should not exist. So tell us about that.
This is also brand new, just published to YouTube earlier in July. And it's a little bit longer. It's about an hour long. They talk about a whole bunch of anomalous artifacts. Like, they do mention the Period Reese map and a few other things like that. They talk about Rock Wall in Texas, which I think I discussed earlier in the year on your show. Mm-hmm. And they go to great lengths about this mysterious site in the Himalayan mountains. They appear to be man-made tunnels, a tunnel system, a tunnel network. I would say you probably could say it's similar to some of these cities in Turkey, in that they appear to have been, man-made, hand-cut rock. So not natural caves. People were living in there for a period of time, and they discovered these stone disks. I think two separate discoveries of 716 exactly each time, which is odd. So over 1,400 of these things, they have mysterious writing on them, mm-hmm. and they almost look like records with a hollow core, almost like a donut. And the language is indecipherable, or at least it was. I think a Chinese researcher claims to have deciphered them, and the stories appear to be about ancient astronauts coming here. At least that's what the documentary claimed. But at the very least, I would say, why are these not being talked about more? Why hasn't there been a greater effort from the scientific community to try to decipher these? Just like there has been in terms of the Rongo Rongo script in Easter Island, for instance. Mm-hmm. Why is this not in the spotlight, and where are these things? So I found this pretty interesting.
Excellent. Okay. So we will post those underneath this week's banner for those of you listening. That means it'll automatically load to earthancients.com. Much easier just to go to Facebook and check it out, because there's so much literature, galleries, and streaming media, which is becoming Adam's preferred content, which is kind of cool. We'll just say it like it is. Adam likes streaming media, right, Adam?
I think it is, for most people that sit at their computer most of the day and work, it's the easiest.
Hey, well, we're becoming a society of attention deficit disorder known as ADD. Yeah. So, because we're all on our computers, we want information now, and we are processing it at a faster speed. You know what? I wonder if someone's done a study to show if all this computer and smartphone use is opening new pathways to consciousness, and we're becoming smarter. I wonder if we've become smarter or stupid using these tools. Some people, I think, believe it's because we're becoming stupid or less able to process because it's given to us so quickly. I don't know. What do you say?
I know that I have a lot of books that sit on my shelf that don't get opened. So.
Okay. Hey, well, just to let you know, we do have Audible is our sponsor, so jump onto that.
All right. Well, great speaking to you again, Cliff, and have a great weekend.
You too. Adam, as always, excellent work, and we'll talk to you next week, buddy.
Of all the boys I've known, and I've known some.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Coming to you live from around the world, it's Earth Ancient News.
Each week we present news from around the world. We choose three top subjects each week to place and talk about here on Earth Ancients podcast. Our first news item is a new discovery in central Mexico that was sent in from one of our listeners. It's a pyramidal structure that was buried under the foundation of a church. It is now being called Templo del Sol, which is Temple of the Sun. And a video was taken, and we have published it. We have it up on our Facebook page, where the entire surface top of the pyramid was removed. A lot of it was used in the construction of the church, but some of the design work on this pyramid is outstanding, especially the symbol that is carved from a single piece of stone and painted. Scientists don't know how old it is, but this is something that Spanish did quite regularly. They were intimidated by the natives' engineering prowess. A lot of the design of the buildings and the pyramidal structures were so modern or sophisticated to the Spanish that they didn't want to have the natives revere these temples, and a lot of them were used for divination, for worship, right up until the time the Spanish showed up, and the Spanish didn't want them thinking about their history. They wanted them to convert to Catholicism, to become good Catholics, and so they destroyed thousands of temples and churches. In fact, temples and pyramidal citadels. In fact, we will be going to Mérida for our tour this year. Mérida sits on top of a huge Mayan complex, which was reduced to the ground. And a great many of the churches and the cathedrals that are that line the streets of Mérida are built from the stones that were taken from these temples. So this is the Temple of the Sun in central Mexico, and it is beautiful, and you can see how it looked when it was above ground. And a fascinating article just shows you what the Spanish were capable of doing in the when they arrived in the New World. An article that was sent to me from one of our readers is a disgrace, actually. Federal officials divulge secret information about Native American artifacts is the title of this article. It appeared in Salon magazine this week, and it's been reported that document identifying specifics on Native American ruins, being Kiva, they could be kivas, they could be buildings that were protected. Some of them as old as 13,000 years have been provided to the public, and apparently there is descriptions of 900 ancient cliff dwellings, spiritual structures, rock art panels, and other Native American antiquities in Utah. The Bureau of Land Management posted a 77-page report online that includes unique identifiers, details on priceless artifacts that used to be information that was not allowed to be published. This is highly damaging, and a number of archaeologists have spoken out about this. I think this is something you can align with the Trump administration and their lack of really understanding the impact of these types of information releases. You can read the entire article on the Facebook page. It's actually on Facebook International or on the group page. I want to also mention that this document appears on the BL, the land management website, and it actually releases land or 51,000 acres, remote desert region of southeastern Utah, so that these areas can be sold for mineral rights, which is in that area would be oil. So here you go. That's bad news for those of us who are interested in the ancient past and those who live in Utah that are trying to preserve the history of that location. Finally, we have an article from author Richard Thornton. We've had Richard on the show before. He posted an article titled Irish Archaeologists Find 5,500-Year-Old Tomb, Petroglyphs That Are Identical to Those in the Georgia Gold Belt. Now, this is a growing phenomenon where European archaeologists are finding symbols, finding construction, finding design features that are also found in the United States. In this case, this was a tomb. There was symbology. There were hieroglyphs, petroglyphs that are found in Georgia, in Georgia's some ruins, some rock art, some petroglyphs, and they are virtually identical. And there are some archaeologists that say, well, it's just a coincidence. It's more likely that this there was transatlantic travel and these symbology, these writings, these petroglyphs were reproduced, stoneworks on walls by people from Eurocentric cultures. So this is a great article. Also, it is some photographs that you can check out on the Facebook page. This interview is brought to you by Audible, and Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/earthancients and browse through the hundreds of thousands of titles and download a title for free. For those of you who are not familiar with Audible, I've talked about them in the past. I actually downloaded Graham Hancock's last book, Magician of the Gods. It was 500 pages. There was no way. There was no way I could read that. Audible had it available. I downloaded it, and within about 4 days, I had finished the entire book. There was no way, no way I could have read that on my own. In fact, I had the book here, and I put it aside. It turned out to be a nice paperweight because it was so big. But this is a great offer. You get your first book for free. Check it out. Go to audibletrial.com/earthancients. It's a great program, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. Hey, and check out all the other books. If you're listening to authors here on the program and you're like me, you don't have time to read, look it up on Audible, download it, and there you go. You can listen to your books as you're driving, as you're resting, as you're relaxing. It really saves a lot of time and energy. Check it out. audibletrial.com/earthancients. All right. So today we're going to discuss cannabis and its many forms, but we're going to talk about it from a historical perspective. We had Stephen Gray on about 8 months ago talking about cannabis and spirituality. He spoke about the use of cannabis from a more of a contemporary point of view. And today, I want to get into the historical perspective of cannabis, its use, how far back it goes. And we're really, really fortunate to have probably one of the best known, if not the most authoritative authors on the history of cannabis, Chris Bennett, with us today. And Chris has been researching the historical role of cannabis in the spiritual life of humanity for more than a quarter of a century. He's author of a number of books, Green Gold, The Tree of Life, Marijuana in Magic and Religion. That's one of his early books. The most recent book is, let's see, we got Sex, Drug, Violence in the Bible. And the one I focused on today is Cannabis and the Soma Solution, which is just outstanding. And there's a number of other books. You can go on to Amazon and you can see these books. He's a wonderful author, very, very easy to read. And but these books are monstrous. Each of them is like a Bible. It's fantastic. Chris, welcome to the program. Great to have you with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Cliff. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, fantastic. I want to preface our discussion today and just mention that in Canada, the legalization of cannabis is growing fairly quickly. Now, here in California, we just legalized it. And throughout America, each state is taking it on, not only because there's great benefits for people who have various afflictions, but in America, we have an opioid addiction crisis. People are dying by the hundreds each day. I can't remember what state it was. I think it was Virginia. I think it's an average of two people a minute or something ridiculous. It's so pathetic and it's terrible. And cannabis is a consideration as an alternative to that. But in Canada, what's the latest for legalization? Is it on the ballot for?
No, it's passed. It's going to be a law legalized in October. Legally, you know, with legal places that are growing it, licensed places distributing it. So no, it's fully passed and it's gone through all the hoops and stuff like that. Now it's heading towards implementation.
Okay. What do you feel about that? As an author, as somebody who's been writing for High Times and some of these early magazines that are now still around, what do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, I've been a cannabis activist since 1990. So, you know, I've gone from a time period where it was illegal to even sell High Times or a bong without threat of over $100,000 fine in 1990 to now there's probably half a dozen dispensaries within a square mile of my home and a billboard on the corner will tell you how to get there. In Vancouver, I am. It's very liberal. The complaints here are, but there's many people that have fought for this and have operated businesses in times of persecution. And these people are legitimately feeling that they're being edged out by more corporate interests, the licensees in many cases of the federal government, you know, which it takes a lot of big money to get into.
Right.
So concerns that there's an attempt to steal the industry from the people who built it and created it and fought for it. That battle's not over, you know, and there's also concern about some of the outrageous laws that are being presented, the way they will drug test for driving, that sort of thing. And, you know, you have to remember we had prohibition of alcohol here in Canada a century ago, and we're still fine-tuning liquor laws and the such today. You know what I
right.
mean?
So
there'll be a long time where these are being adjusted and changed. And the initial bad laws that are part of the legalization scheme of the federal government will be challenged in court and probably, you know, adjusted accordingly and things like that. So expect change. And the fight's not over for full freedom and access to this plant.
We had the same thing in California. Of course, I'm close to Northern California, which is the they call it the diamond, the Humboldt County, Mendocino County, where a lot of cannabis strains got their origins. And the mom and pop businesses have been, unfortunately, the black market, the underground railroad, if you want to call it that, of supply and demand. And now with the corporations taking over, these little mom and pop places are being driven out of business. And so there's a whole new spectrum behind it. But how far back can we go to find evidence of cannabis use for divination? You say around 30,000, but is it older than that? Is it about that amount?
No, 30,000 for hemp. You know, there's evidence, hemp, you know, hemp. We're talking about cannabis, you know, the whole plant and humanity's relationship with it.
Right.
According to Elizabeth Whalen Barber, who's probably the foremost expert in agent textiles, she suggests that evidence of tools used for breaking the fibers off of the hemp plant go back to about 25,000 years ago.
Okay.
There's evidence of hemp rope, about 24,000, hemp cloth, about 12,000, both in Taiwan and in cattle hayaks, so quite extensively apart. You know, obviously, it's been around by some time by then. And as far as ritual, like inhalation or ingestion of cannabis, the oldest evidence of archaeological evidence of it is from 5,500 years ago in the Ukraine region, where there was a polypod bowl found in a cave that was used for burning cannabis. And the cave was a means of holding the fumes with inside the cave in order to get the full effects out of them.
Right.
But, you know, going back to like 4,000 years in the Bactria Margiana archaeological complex, which is in Afghanistan, there is evidence found by the Russian archaeologist Viktor Serianaty of a 4,000-year-old temple complexes, and he says these temples were used. Some of these temples were very big. There's like two or three of them, and they're about the size of a football field. Half of one of the big ones was dedicated to the preparation of a sacred beverage, which he claims was the soma of India that, you know, when it traveled over there from the same cult, but Haoma here in this region.
Right.
And he shows archaeological evidence of cannabis and ephedra being used, and in some cases poppy as well. And that goes back 4,000 years. So that's okay.
Let's talk about soma and Haoma. Basically, what that is you describe it as a ancient psychoactive beverage, and that's why soma is. I mean, in the beginning of your book, you say that they're not sure it's cannabis. It could be mushrooms, could be other psychoactive plants. But in general, what does it mean? When you write soma, what is that referred to?
And you have to talk about it in relation to this other term, Haoma.
Haoma, right.
It's this sacred beverage that was part of Indo-European culture. Indo-European culture is ancient stuff that goes way back. Cannabis is intimately intertwined with Indo-European culture. In fact, the oldest known sort of language, the root language for our modern languages, for English, French, German, and Sanskrit in this case, is in Indo-European languages. And the root for cannabis is common in all of those and goes back to this Indo-European term, kana. And so it's very, 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 very ancient relationship. Mm-hmm. And the sacrament of the Indo-European peoples in Persia, as well as India, was this sacred beverage. In Persia, it was known as Haoma. And in India, it was known as soma. And it inspired their poets to write their religious texts, the Vedas in the case of India, and the Gathas in the case of the Mazdean progenitors, what later became Zoroastrianism.
Right.
There's been many theories about what this sacred beverage was. Serianaty's archaeological evidence, which I referred to earlier, goes a long way into identifying this preparation as a cannabis preparation. In my book, Cannabis and the Soma Solution, I point to a number of archaeological finds related to this, which I think further identify cannabis soma. And my view is, and this is the view of other linguists and things like that, and I build my case, as you can see, by going through various sources to verify the different points I try to make. So I don't want to take credit for other people's research here. I just want to make that, you know, caveat.
Right.
Is that recently there's been finds of cannabis in tombs in central China, but these tombs aren't Han Chinese, indigenous Chinese people. These are the tombs of Indo-European people that are known as the Gushi. And they found both cannabis, female cannabis flowers, psychoactive cannabis, not, you know, used for, you know, fiber purposes, but clearly a medicinal, psychoactive, spiritual type of cannabis. And they've also found ephedra at these same sites, which were also found in this other region. And usually in the context of somebody that would be considered like a shaman or high priest or something like that of the culture. Well, the Chinese name for cannabis is Huma.
Huh.
And this culture here was exporting cannabis from this region into the Bactria Margiana archaeological complex. I feel confident in saying this because artifacts from both regions were found at either site. You know what I mean? Identifying their trade routes, right? You know, I believe that what happened is when the cannabis traveled from this region, which is a very good area for growing cannabis, it's thought that, you know, near here, the Tian Shan Mountains might be the homeland of cannabis indica, the very potent psychoactive form of cannabis.
Has it been determined to be originating from that area? Is that what you're suggesting?
That bleeds into that. It's among the suggestions by botanists, historians. You know what I mean? It's right. We have the evidence of cannabis and ephedra being used at both sites.
Wow.
And then intervening in that, there's this group known as the Scythians, who I'm sure you're familiar with. And there's a famous account from Herodotus of the Scythians burning cannabis inside a tent. They would set up a teepee-like tent structure, heat up rocks, throw cannabis in the rocks, then put their heads inside the tent and inhale the fumes. But the Scythians also drank cannabis. And there have been finds of cannabis wines, infused wines with the Scythians. And more recently, National Geographic did a story about these golden goblets, which were misidentified in the popular press as bongs, but they were actually drinking vessels that had evidence of cannabis and opium in them.
Okay.
And I would suggest that if they check further, they'd likely find ephedra in that. And the Russian archaeologists involved in this study said that what this was a preparation of hayoma. The Scythians themselves in the ancient texts are referred to as the Hayoma Varga. They're highly nomadic people. I should report, in regards to the Scythians' nomadic abilities, and they were highly trained horsemen and stuff like that, thought to be the first to do that. In relation to that first discovery in the Ukraine region, this is also the region where it's believed the horse was domesticated, and the horse itself domesticated by the invention of hemp ropes that enable them to be corralled and managed.
So let's go back a little bit. You mentioned the Vedic texts and their religion describing the use of cannabis. Do we have any writings about the effects, the state of the consciousness under the influence of this psychoactive soma hayoma compound?
Oh yeah, you know, the texts are full of how it inspires the poets and makes them feel like they're traveling in the airs with the gods and that type of stuff. You know what I mean? Raises man to that level, divine level. But it's clearly what the source of inspiration is, and it's referred to as in the 10th mandala of the Rig Veda, which is the Rig Veda that specifically deals with the identification of soma. It's described as a green and purple tree and how they beat it with rocks. This is very similar to the preparation and of the mortar and pestle preparation of modern, which is still consumed in India, bong, which is sacred to Shiva, the cult of Shiva, you know.
Okay.
So there's a big interrelationship there, as I show.
So the liquid form of cannabis must have a different type of effect than smoking, because obviously if you ingest the leaves of, say, a sativa plant, it's not going to be the same, or is it more powerful according to what we understand?
Well, ingesting cannabis, can be a lot more powerful. Everything refers to dosage levels like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the agent, and there's no reason to think that they were just ingesting leaves or anything like that. You know what I mean? It's like plant matter. I'm sure they knew what quality cannabis was. We know from the Gushi archaeological finds in China that they were dealing with buds, female buds of cannabis.
Okay.
Ingesting cannabis can be very powerful, but you also have to consider we can't go by our own experience. We're dealing with Asian people and a whole different experience. And also, the historical record is full of people having very powerful effects out of cannabis extracts, cannabis preparations, cannabis-infused wines. And there's no denying that these types of powerful experiences can do it. In many cases, that's not what's being described in Veda. It could purely be a source of inspiration for poetic type of mind, because the Vedas, like a lot of ancient religious literature, is written in verse, and is all, and how they come about it is just music playing and kind of like a modern rapper, smoking a blunt and then listening to a beat. He starts getting this right brain kind of trance, and then the starts coming out. And that's the same sort of way that a lot of the ancient religious texts were written. Use of psychoactive substances, music, throwing people into a right brain trance, and also a lot of set and setting.
It's funny because you describe a number of scientists and academics reporting on what is called, they describe it as an evolutionary leap in using cannabis at a certain stage in man's development. I think it's 24,000 years ago. Czech Republic, there's hemp fibers in clothing and stuff like that. But my question to you is, from a prehistoric man's point of view, when they say great leap forward, we're talking about a consciousness leap, aren't we?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So can you describe that a little bit, what that means?
Yeah, well, this is the theory of Dr. Jeffrey Guy, who's the head of GW Pharmaceuticals, and a noted cannabis researcher, John McPartland. Mm-hmm. They suggest that cannabis may have played a role in the time period known as the Great Leap Forward. And that is a time period where a lot of novel inventions began to take place, and new approaches, tool making, training of fire, the wheel, all these types of things, right? And they say that the addition of cannabis into humanity's diet and the way it creates new novel ways of thinking, and most of it is a huge amount of receptors in the areas of higher thinking and memory in the human brain, cannabis receptors, that this may have led to new and novel ways of looking at things, and this in turn it led to inventions. And also there's a noted oracular effect of increasing night vision, which has been documented as well. Mm-hmm. Which increases, you know, a chance of survival and things like
so
that.
So it's almost like there's an area that we don't understand, a physiological area that's just now beginning to be, and we're going to talk a little bit about the benefits of cannabis a little bit later, but
yeah, well, you know, I think you have to look at like how we're just discovering the endocannabinoid system in
the body. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about
how the human physiology of the human body already has these cannabis or cannabinoid receptors, and how cannabis affects those, please? That's
yeah, well, this all goes back to them trying to identify how are we getting these psychoactive effects out of cannabis, looking at molecules in cannabis, and tracing it down to THC, and finding that the THC molecule is so similar to molecules in the human body that they're able to attached to receptors in the human body, and these are spread out through the whole body and play an important role in all sorts of areas of health. And this is why a lot of diseases are being suggested now to be related to endocannabinoid deficiency, meaning the body's not producing enough of these endogenous cannabis molecules. You know what I mean? I don't give anybody the impression that I'm a scientist. There's lots of people that are, you know, well-versed in this. I'm, you know, more but into history and stuff like that, but I know a bit about it. And so these are spread throughout the human body. And because of this, it's, you know, beginning to like, and we take a look at our agent relationship with cannabis. You know, Carl Sagan speculated that it was humanity's first agricultural crop. He used the pygmies as an example because the pygmies were basically hunter-gatherers until they began using cannabis ritually. The pygmies themselves say they've been using cannabis since the dawn of time, and that God gave them cannabis to be healthy and happy. That might more mean to be related to the pygmies' conception of time. And time in many ways begins with agricultural time, planting of crops and things like that, those sorts of cycles, right? Other people have suggested this as well. You know, if not our first agricultural crop, among the first, we can see from this agent relationship we have with it, right?
A
lot of times cannabis was grown in night soil, which is just like human waste, and that was, you know, how we had this interactive relationship with the world, where surprise, surprise, we weren't polluting the world with our human waste, but we were fertilizing our crops and things like that. And agent references to soma say actually soma grows best where man and animal pisses. You know what I mean? So it's where fertilized soil is.
Yeah.
In a sense, we were putting ourselves into the soil, ingesting this plant. Maybe there's some sort of, you know, relationship like bees and flowers with cannabis. This is purely speculation I'm going into here. You know what I mean? But it's something that I've often wondered when I take a look at the agent spiritual life of humanity and how far this planet goes and how important it was. You know, like I say, there's whole books written, you know, the whole 10th Mandela is dedicated to this planet, basically, in the Soma, if we identify cannabis with this.
Yeah, and it shows right there that because it's made in, you know, cannabis is made into Vedic verses and things like this, that it's a very, very spatial, a special and sacred plant. I want to ask you again, in your book, you talk about how up until a certain period of time, the common man could use cannabis, and then the churches got a hold of it and the shamans, and they basically lost a lot of knowledge behind growing it and actually using it, except for maybe a handful of people as the history moves on. And the church had it perhaps because they didn't want the common man to use cannabis in the very early period of prehistory, maybe because it did enlighten them, maybe because they were able to tap into these higher realms. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that, you know, the whole basis of, you know, say a church like the Catholic Church, when it took hold of power and banned all the pagan cults and all the Gnostic Christian cults and all the various sects, it had a lot to do with prohibiting these substances. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, entheogens, which means spirit, you know, spirit within, named for these psychoactive plants because they help you to find that, is one of the biggest heresies. You know, I am God, the idea that you, the essence of you is the essence of God, is like heresy. And the whole purpose of the church is to instill a hierarchy of priests, bishops, and popes in order to control the holy truth. They are the ladder you must climb in order to be led into the Holy of Holies, and you only ever get told about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a pivotal part of it. You know what I mean? It's not like I think the modern Catholic Church and the Pope are conspiring against this agent thing with all this knowledge about it. You know what I mean? I'm sure for them, they've got lost by the wayside centuries ago, any ideas about it and things like that. But, you know, definitely descriptions from some of the church fathers of Gnostic texts focus on psychoactive substances being used.
Right, right.
And consider it quite heretical.
You bring up, I don't remember his last name, Dr. Robert, is it Malamedy?
Dr. Robert Malamed?
Yeah. He actually, you wrote that he has found that there is anti-aging effects in cannabis. Also, we're discovering, and he has written about its help with Alzheimer's, cardiovascular diseases, things like that. Do you think the ancients had this an idea about this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, there's references to cannabis specifically by name, in reference to longevity in medieval tantric texts, and it was one of the superior elixirs of immortality in ancient Chinese Taoist. Right. You know what I mean? So absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. One of the oldest women who ever lived, Phula Nayak, in India, lived to be about 125. She attributed it to her
use. I saw that, 120. Yeah, she died at 100, and she said that she used it every day. And it was her, I think she called it her fountain of youth.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually, you know, when you bring up things like medical qualities that we're now discovering, how much of this stuff is actually in Asian texts. You know, there's a malady in Asian Assyrian texts called Hand of Ghost, which is thought to be an ancient reference to epilepsy. Epilepsy was thought to be a spiritual possession up until medieval times. Mm-hmm. That was treated with cannabis, you know. Paracelsus was prescribing cannabis in an arcanum in like the 16th century. So a lot of this stuff is just being rediscovered, alone discovered, you know what I mean? And when they talk about needs for tests and stuff like that, well, you know, if cannabis is not the first medicine, you know, I would say that it's certainly among the first medicine. It certainly appears in the oldest pharmacopoeias in the Chinese Pentasao, which according to some goes back to 2700 BC. or Ayurvedic texts, you know, from 1500 BC, you know what I mean? And Egyptian references from around that same period for medical qualities.
I find it fascinating that that they have discovered that the human body has these receptors and other components that's found in not only cannabis, but, you know, some of the psychoreactive areas of the brain. And to even consider that the ancients knew about this is fascinating. And it's really is lost knowledge in many ways.
I think when it's understood, you know, just as the endocannabinoid and the discovery of that is leading to whole new areas and understanding in medicine, when it's fully understood, the role of cannabis in the ancient world and its particularly its role in the religious texts, like that is the, and I propose the Bible as well. When it's fully understood, it's as much a threat to fundamental religion as Darwin's theory of evolution was to the myths of creation in Genesis. Because what it shows is that the priests and prophets of yore were actually more like shaman or witch doctors of other countries, South America, Africa, North America, that ingested psychoactive plants and interpreted the experiences they had from those psychoactive plants as divine revelations, possessions, and interactions. What that shows is that the sort of shamanic religions that the Christianity and Judaism and Islam have fought against are at the very core of those religions themselves.
Yeah, because the common man could smoke or ingest psychoactive plants like cannabis and have these experiences which could bring out knowledge. So that's the controlling factors right there. Today we have people who are going on ayahuasca trips. And they are seeing fascinating elements of animal, plant, spirit realms communicating with them. Some people have written about their experiences. We get into DMT and these other psychoactive properties. Do we have writings from various shaman or people using cannabis in a way to bring forth a knowledge of the future of man from the ancient past? Is there any premonition work or anything like that?
Yeah. Well, actually, this is really, you know, interesting when you come to these Zoroastrian references. Zoroaster is an ancient prophet of the Persian religion who brought into monotheism the early religion, which the Helma cult was. The Mazdean religion. Mm-hmm. And according to Zoroastrian texts, and these texts date up into the 5th century AD, so this was going on for some time, figures like Ardu Viraf would drink seven cups of cannabis-infused wine from golden cups, so much so it would knock him out for a couple of days. You know, and it's important to remember that the first anesthetic was that we know of was a cannabis-infused wine used in China, and complicated operations were able to be performed under the knockout effects of this preparation. And Ardu Viraf's vision are the source of the concepts of heaven and hell. He said he traveled to the afterworld and saw, you know, the wicked being punished in hell and, you know, the righteous being rewarded in heaven. And later, another figure in the Zoroastrian religion is this figure Vishtaspa. Vishtaspa was a king said to be Zoroaster's first convert, and he converted to the faith after having an experience with this cannabis-infused wine. And he prophesied the end of the world. And this is the basis for the Book of Revelation. We know it's the basis for the Book of Revelation because in Greek, Vishtaspa becomes Hystaspius, and the oracle of Hystaspius predicted the fall of Rome and was illegal literature in the Christian period.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. So there are references in ancient texts to divination for the purpose of prognostication, and also I would think that the information would also perhaps be help in the development of laws and civil.
Absolutely. You know, I think that this is a good time to bring in these controversial references in Hebrew to this term known as kanabasa. And in 1936, Sula Bennett, a Polish anthropologist and etymologist, suggested by showing the tracing the modern term for cannabis that was used in Hebrew, kanabas, back through the language, that these ancient references, which first appear in Exodus 30:23, where God commands Moses to make a holy anointing oil with about 6.5 pounds of this kanabas, mixed with myrrh and cinnamon, into about 1.5 gallons of olive oil. Modern Bibles, and since the Latin translations have translated this term as calamus, but it's important to remember that these translations weren't done by botanists, and they were probably thinking that was the choice, but not necessarily familiar with the many plants referred to in the Bible, and perhaps a misidentification happened, perhaps something on purpose happened, who knows? But Sula Bennett suggested that this term was a reference to cannabis. And when you take a look at this term in comparison to the known term for cannabis in the Assyrian literature, kanabu, and its phonetic similarity in sound and the identical way that it was used, a strong case is to be made, because in the Exodus 30:23 account, he's commanded, and it's important to remember that Moses first speaks to the Lord from angels, from an angel who appears from within flames of fire from a burning bush. the bush commands him to make this holy oil. And every time he's to speak to the Lord, he's going to the tent of the meeting, it's described, which is much like one of those Scythian tents, this enclosed area. He covers himself in this oil, and THC is fatty soluble, and your body is a big organ. And there's references to cannabis ointments being used for divinatory purposes going into the 16th century in Jewish magical texts, and also places some of this oil on the altar of incense, and he speaks to the Lord in the pillar of smoke over the altar of incense. Now, it's important to remember here that even the substitute, calamus, is psychoactive. It's a little dangerous to work with, but it does have some psychoactive qualities. But when you throw cannabis into the scenario, and you have Moses burning this cannabis oil and covering himself in this cannabis oil, and Dr. Ethan Russo has suggested that the myrrh and cinnamon may increase blood flow to the skin, making it able to transfer through the skin barrier better. And then inhaling those in fumes in an enclosed area, Moses ponders on a question, and he comes out, and then he says, "This is what the Lord your God says." So, it's like almost like an interaction, and it's interesting. I don't know if you're familiar with the psychologist Julian Jaynes. He wrote a book about the origins of consciousness and the breakdown of the bicameral mind. And he suggests that thinking was an evolutionary development that took place, say, 3,000-4,000 years ago in humanity, or started to take place. And that language operates in a different area of the brain. It can totally function without the ability for interior thinking, like I think, therefore I am. And it's more like the yips and yelps of a coyote pack, or the signals of whales and that sort of thing. And he suggests that the first people to think experience it much like a schizophrenic, something coming from outside of themselves. It would kick in at times of stress, maybe starving yourself, and psychoactive drugs.
Wow.
And Moses goes into that tent. What are we going to do? And a voice comes back and says, "This is what you shall do." And goes out and says this to the people. It's important to remember, even in the biblical account, none of the other people talk to God. It's only when Moses is in the tent of the meeting and the smoke's coming out of it that Moses is talking to God through the whole story. You know what I mean? And this is similar to, we find these similar things in the Assyrian religion, where there's references to cannabis in anointing oil to open one's ear to God, where it's a major component. There's records of how much cannabis was going to the temple and how much it was going to cost, And the items for the sacred rites are described as honey, odorous plants, and cannabis. You know what I mean? So we have contemporary use in nearby Assyria with figures mentioned in the Bible, like Assurbanipal and his son Esarhaddon, using it for this exact same purpose. So it's a very, very strong case.
Do we have any records or references of types of strains of cannabis being developed for certain uses? In other words, maybe they could, I mean, I don't know if they knew the term THC, but maybe they learned another language in terms of potency. And if you use this concoction in this degree, you will have this kind of vision, or you will learn this or something like that. Is there any of that reference?
There was definitely quality and lack of quality. And that's why it was a major item on the spice trade routes, you know. And I think that what this discovery of this cannabis growing and using culture in China does is, you know, it turns the Silk Road into as much a hempen highway as Silk Road. And cannabis was a major item, you know what I mean? And the incense on the Silk Road would go for as much as gold. We can bet that quality incenses, that are the ones that were the best in the temple that got the most effect out of the people there, you know, likely contained psychoactive substances.
Now, you write that it was cultivated in China approximately 4,500 BC. And is that based on samples found in their mummies, or is it just...
it's based on things like seed impressions and in pottery, hemp fiber impressions, archaeological finds. Like I said, in China, there's in Taiwan, just near China, it's like evidence of hemp fiber from 12,000 years ago. It's a piece of hemp cloth.
Right. And you just mentioned the Silk Road. So it gets into European culture, early European culture. And then ultimately, according to your book, in 3500 BC, cannabis hits Egypt. Hemp's found in Ramses II's mummy. Also, it was used to make rope. How active were the Egyptians in the using cannabis?
You know, the references to the medical stuff in the papyri, where it's known as Shem Shemet, indicate topical preparations. There's one where it might be in reference to incense, but not a lot directly, you know, indicating its entheogenic use, unless you consider nepenthe. Nepenthe is this Egyptian cannabis and Egyptian wine written about in the story of Homer that relieves sadness, right? Some people have suggested this is opium, but the Greeks were very familiar with opium. They have a long history of opium use, so they wouldn't have misidentified some other plant's effects as, you know, as not being opium when they were well familiar with it. And they have found a wine amphora from ancient Egypt that did contain residues of cannabis pollen in it.
Okay, interesting. Now, on a little side note, you have a great article and reference to a world-famous Russian toxicologist who in the, 1996, discovered in these Egyptian mummies not only traces of cannabis, but also traces of coca, which is cocaine, and tobacco, which at the time set the archaeological community in a major tailspin. The reason being is that coca and tobacco come from the Americas, and how in the hell did they get to the Middle East 4,000, almost 5,000 years ago. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, that would be great if it was solid information. But as I, you know, discussed when I go into that, I went through a lot of papers on this. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a while ago, like 10 years ago, I was researching this. But I went through both the for and against academic views on these claims, and I kind of think it's too clouded into controversy to call it a certain. These tests are based on biomarkers of these substances in the human body, and these biomarkers can change and be altered or be reproduced, possibly by combinations of other plants. And it's important to remember the embalming process involved with these Egyptian mummies, where all sorts of things were used, and possibly in some cases. Plants that are now extinct, you know what I mean? We're going back a long time period, you know what I mean? Plants are no longer around. So it's...
Oh, you're saying that in the case of being extinct, maybe they did grow their own tobacco or coca.
No, not tobacco, but some other plant that has the same biomarker.
Oh, I hear you. Okay.
You know what I mean? Some sort of nicotine-like substance or something
like
that.
Well, I mean, here on the plant, on our show, Earth Ancients, we do have a lot of theorists and a lot of authors who do believe in not only transoceanic trade, but there's evidence that the Chinese were in the Americas as far back as 4,000 years ago, simply because they found these unusual anchors off of L.A., Los Angeles. And there's I had a research investigator who has found evidence of Chinese symbology in the Southwest. So,
you know, I'm not the person to speak to on that.
Oh, yeah, I know. I want your opinion.
I already have controversy enough going over the ancient cannabis stuff. Then I bring in this other aspect, because a couple of people have come on to me of like, you know, there's no historical Jesus, but you're right about Jesus. Things like that, these different new theories that are popping up. And, you know, I do offer some definite alternative views on history. But I'm just not touching on things like Atlantis or ancient world trade and things like that. And, you know, I would love it. You know what I mean? If there's something solid came up, I would love it if there was not a lot of academic arguments against Balboa's finds with these Egyptian mummies and the tobacco and coca claims proved to be true. Because there's also cannabis claims in South American mummies, and cannabis is not a New World plant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you run into the same controversy with those claims. I'd love it if we could find some really solid evidence of it, but it's controversial.
The thing that you do bring up, and you have this hint throughout your book, Soma and Cannabis, is the fact that it is used for greater perception, the cannabis properties of either smoking or drinking. And I'm curious about getting your impression from a personal point of view, if at some point we do discover that it does have brain consciousness enhancing physiological effects over the long term, and we can actually say, as you subscribe to, that it does lead itself into an evolutionary pattern for humanoids. So what do you say to that? You talked a little bit about that, but I mean,
you know, this is something I looked at more in my most recent book, Liber 420, Cannabis, Magical Herbs and the Occult, which covers the period of history roughly from about 12th century to about the 19th century. One of the things I came across while I was researching that were these magical grimoires that had recipes for cannabis to be used for mirror scrying. Master mirrors, you know, staring into a mirror until visions appear, right? You know what I mean? And I started thinking about this relationship. And also, in the early 19th century, cannabis had a lot to do with the identification of the unconscious and subconscious mind and how this interrelates with dreaming. And this goes back to the works of Dr. J.J. Moreau, one of the members of the club, the Hashishines, who was doing a lot of experiences with cannabis. And it can be directly shown that this research led to our understanding of what Freud and Jung referred to as the unconscious or subconscious mind in Freud's case. This has to do with the relationship with dreaming, the unconscious mind, and the subconscious mind. This is what I've come to the conclusion of, is that the same one speaking to these people from the mirrors, and this use of cannabis with magic mirrors can be traced well into the 19th century. Lots of people were doing this in the 19th century. People like Pascal Beverly Randolph, Louis Alphonse Cagney were using hashish in conjunction with the same magical mirror. And what this has to do with is cannabis's effects on dreaming and the unconscious. And what I'm talking about here is one of the common things that a lot of, say, regular daily users of cannabis report is they don't dream as much. And this is something that's puzzled scientists and researchers. And in the 80s, is the last time this sort of research took place, they did some studies on this, and they found that immediately following cannabis use, a register on melatonin found it had spiked as much as 4,000 times regular daily levels.
Wow.
And so people are spiking their melatonin all day. Melatonin has a big effect on dreaming. They're dreaming less at night. Surprise, surprise. Now, in personal studies, I've found I've gotten up a couple of times at 4 in the morning. And I thought, oh, I'm just going to have a bowl or something like that so I can get back to sleep. Smoked a bit of weed and gone back to sleep. And because I'm already in that, been in that deep REM sleep, I go back into it deeper. And I've had the most intense visual dreams that I've ever had. And I attribute this to the same huge spike in melatonin, you know. And it's important, not just magic mirrors. Cannabis appears in association with astral traveling throughout the 19th century in all sorts of texts. In fact, you could take a look at the American Fitzhugh Ludlow's account, The Hashish Eater, written in 1850 in the United States. And it's full of imagery of another realm and stuff like that he acquired through taking potent extracts of cannabis.
Wow.
And so there's this relationship between the dream state and cannabis that is taking place. And I think that cannabis, and this is why it was used in magic, you know, and also in alchemy, you know, what's the alchemy, but the marriage of the sun and the sun being our daily aware consciousness, the moon being our nighttime consciousness. Because think about the dreaming state. You are in it, you are being told it, and you are all the characters in it. It's like another aspect of ourself. You know what I mean? And that's what they're talking about when they're talking about the subconscious and unconscious. It's like our hidden self. And cannabis, you know, and it can bring about that marriage of the sun and the moon, which is the big dream of alchemy. This is why we see it in magic and alchemy, and also its use in initiatory societies. Because it's a physical reintroducer, a sacrament that reintroduces us to the secret aspect of ourselves, the emperor of our dreams.
Wow. Yeah, your new book, Liber 420, Cannabis, Magic, Herbs, and the Occult, is another. That just came out. That's your newest book.
Yeah.
I will put that on the Facebook page. I wanted to ask you, from a historic perspective, do you see, as it's becoming more legal, a growing benefit for a cultural change if it becomes legalized throughout, you know, the world, or
cannabis is a paradigm shift. You know, my whole experience with cannabis, the writing of these books, I'm actually like a high school dropout. You know, these books appear very academic. I have professors reading them and commenting them and plugs like that. But my research into cannabis goes back to a very powerful religious experience I had in 1990, smoking cannabis late one night and perchance reading the Book of Revelation. And when I read the closing verses of the Book of Revelation, Revelation 22, on either side of the river of life stood the tree of life, bearing 12 manners of fruit, yielding its fruit each month, and the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. I had a very powerful experience where light entered into me, and that cannabis was that tree of life. And after that, I thought, I've lost my shit. My wife thought I had some sort of breakdown. And I thought, well, maybe, you know. But if there is anything to this, then somebody somewhere will have written about it. And I started collecting data on the role of cannabis in history and the ancient world and put together these now four books, working on my fifth now as well, on the history and of cannabis, and gaining increasing acceptance for my work. So to me, cannabis is the paradigm shift. It's the tree of life. It's soma. Wow. It's haoma. And
so from your books and from all the research that you've done, you show a timeline of its use, of its cultivation, of how it was, how it migrates from China through the European area to ancient Middle East and so on and so forth. I haven't read your newest book, Magical Herbs and the Occult, Cannabis, How It's Used. But there must be a timeline somewhere. And of course, the church gets involved and it shuts it all down for centuries. And I don't know if you cover what was being done during those dark periods, the dark ages, you might want to call it.
Yeah. Some of these texts that I refer to have to do with that. And we're considered heretical texts, you know, in some cases, and people were burnt at the stake, and these sorts of things happened. Yeah, there's a lot to it. It's a complicated relationship, and different things happen in different areas and different times. And sometimes the church was quite okay with it. In the 12th century, a pope actually wrote a book on medicine that had a cannabis-infused wine in it. That pope later was, of course, after his death, accused of heresy. So it's a complicated thing. You know what I mean? There's a lot to be said on it. That's why that Liber 420 is a whopping like about 800 pages. Because it's a complicated issue. It's a complicated history. And there's a lot to cover if you want to take it seriously. And I try to take it very seriously.
I don't know enough about the extract CBD, and I know it has great healing properties and so on and so forth. THC being the psychoactive component of cannabis. But for those people who don't consume cannabis, and if CBD doesn't have the psychoactive properties, I wonder if there's still a cellular benefit that people would get from the use of the oils and the other consumables that don't have THC.
There's a lot of people taking CBD products that aren't using cannabis. That are finding relief and stuff like that. But I'm not the person to ask about those medical questions, you know.
Right, definitely.
Historical person.
We're at the end of our time. This has been great. It always goes quickly. That was like, I think I mentioned 8 to 10 questions. The last thing I want to ask you, what do you want the reader to get from this, from your work and the writing of your book? What's the takeaway?
That cannabis is an agent plant ally, and that humanity has a natural right to the plants of the earth that is akin to our right to air and water and ground, you know what I mean? And it's a natural thing. And we're talking about cannabis. We're talking about a plant ally that we have had a relationship with for tens of thousands of years and has been used by some of the greatest figures in history.
Exactly. Amazing. Okay, hey, if you guys are interested in Chris Bennett's books, again, they're on Amazon. His latest book is Liber 420, Cannabis, Magical Herbs and the Occult. The book that I was focusing on is, where is it here? I got a list here of so many. Chris has written, he's just a prolific
Cannabis
writer.
Cannabis and the Soma Solution.
Cannabis and the Soma Solution, which was written in 2010. But I specifically asked ahead of time which book was more historic in nature. If you're really interested in the historical notions of cannabis, Chris does an excellent job of going through actually the whole planet and many, if not all of the ancient known literate societies had some active cannabis consumption in their societies. Chris, this has been great fun. Before I let you go, are you lecturing anywhere? What's going on with all this new activity?
I've been talking at conferences and universities and things like that for years. So I'm always given the odd thing, not on any sort of particular tour, but when I get invited to events, I go and present and that type of stuff. And if you go to YouTube and put my name and cannabis in, there's all sorts of interviews and documentaries I've made, things like that.
That reminds me, what's your website for people to check out?
I don't have a website, but I got a blog over at cannabisculture.com. And if you search my name at cannabisculture.com, you'll come up with all sorts of articles and material that I put together.
Right. And those of you that want to go check that out, his articles are excellent. They're reproduced all over the place. I've pulled a couple and placed them on our Facebook page. And very, very fun to read. Very, very easy to read and really eye-opening. Hey, Chris, been a great pleasure. We're going to have you back and talk about this other book, okay?
Okay. Sounds great, my friend. Take care.
You know, after interviewing Chris, I was curious. And I still am curious to know how the scientific community will begin looking closer at the benefits of cannabis and actually marketing them. I did mention that we have an opioid addiction in America. People are dying. And now that cannabis is becoming legal in more and more states, I hope more research is done on the benefits. Because I think there's a lot. I think that we're missing out on a lot of the benefits of this wonderful healing agent. So much more needs to be discovered, researched, and uncovered is the word, uncovered about this God plant. So very, very fun to have Chris on with us. Okay, that's it for today. I want to thank Chris Bennett, my guest today, Melissa Tittle, Adam Young, and the production team of Mark Foster and Curtis Hartog. Great work as always, everyone, and thank you. Next week, it's beginning of the flood, 3 weeks of the flood. We might squeeze in a fourth week, make it a solid 4-week program. There is a lot to talk about, and there are a lot of new discoveries, a lot of new research that hasn't really come to light yet, and we have a real eclectic and solid group of presenters over the next 3 weeks. So don't forget to join us next week here on Earth Ancients. Okay, have a great day, and we will talk to you next time.